and kissing you in spirit. Part of him ached from the pain, and just as he was coasting high and ahead of the pack on the crest of the wave. Maybe it was the influence of the Boer War or the unrest brewing in Cuba, but Tesla's destructive streak began to emerge. His previous inventions were already reshaping human events. His newest creation could interlink every remote hamlet or tear the world apart. He decided to experiment. With George Scherf present, Tesla placed one of his mechanical oscillators on the center support beam in the basement of the Houston Street building where his laboratory was located, and adjusted the frequency to the point where the beam began to hum. While he was attending to something else for a few moments, it attained such a crescendo of rhythm that it started to shake the building. Then it began shaking the earth near about and other buildings with support beams in resonant frequencies. The fire department responded to an alarm frantically turned in. 4 tons of machinery flew across the basement, and the only thing which saved the building from utter collapse was the quick action of Dr. Tesla in seizing a hammer and destroying his machine. "The device could be a Frankenstein's monster," Tesla confided many years later. "If not watched, no substance can withstand the steadily applied rhythm when its resonance point is reached. Skyscrapers could easily be destroyed with the steady build-up of resonance from the time strokes of a 5-pound hammer." In another rendition of the story, told at another time, Tesla claimed that he had taken his alarm clock-sized oscillator to a building site in the Wall Street district. Finding one under construction, about 10 stories high of steel framework, he clamped the vibrator to one of the beams and fussed with the adjustment until he got it. "In a few minutes, I could feel the beam trembling," Tesla told a reporter. "Gradually, the trembling increased in intensity and extended throughout the whole great mass of steel. Finally, the structure began to creak and weave, and the steel workers came to the ground panic-stricken, believing there had been an earthquake. Rumors spread that the building was about to fall, and the police reserves were called out. Before anything serious happened, I took off the vibrator, put it in my pocket, and went away. But if I had kept on 10 minutes more, I could have laid that building flat in the street, and with the same vibrator, I could drop the Brooklyn Bridge into the East River in less than an hour." Tesla told the reporter that he could split the earth in the same way, putting an end to mankind. "The vibrations of the earth," he said, "have a periodicity of approximately 1 hour and 49 minutes. That is to say, if I strike the earth this instant, a wave of contraction goes through it that will come back in 1 hour and 49 minutes in the form of expansion. As a matter of fact, the earth, like everything else, is in a constant state of vibration. It is constantly contracting and expanding. Now suppose that at the precise moment when it begins to contract, I explode a ton of dynamite. That accelerates the contraction. And in 1 hour and 49 minutes, there comes an equally accelerated wave of expansion. When the wave of expansion ebbs, suppose I explode another ton, and suppose this performance be repeated time after time. Is there any doubt as to what would happen? There is no doubt in my mind. The earth would be split in two. For the first time in man's history, he has the knowledge with which he may interfere with cosmic processes." Tesla calculated that this procedure might take more than a year to succeed. "But in a few weeks," Tesla said, "I could set the Earth's crust into such a state of vibration that it would rise and fall hundreds of feet, throwing rivers out of their beds, wrecking buildings, and practically destroying civilization. The principle cannot fail."
23. Frill Power, 1898. We entered an immense hall, lighted by a luster, but diffusing a fragrant odour. The floor was in large tessellated blocks of precious metals, and partly covered with a sort of mat-like carpeting. A strain of low music, above and around, undulated as if from invisible instruments. In a simpler garb than that of my guide, a figure was standing motionless near the threshold. My guide touched it twice with his staff, and it put itself into a rapid and gliding movement, skimming noiselessly over the floor. Gazing on it, I then saw that it was no living form, but a mechanical automaton. Several other automata stood dumb and motionless by the walls. The coming race, Edward Bulwer Lytton. One of Tesla's major inventions in terms of ingenuity, originality and complexity of design was a remote-controlled robotic boat which he called the teleautomaton. This device was unveiled at the Electrical Exposition held at Madison Square Garden during the height of the Spanish-American War in May 1898, but earlier precursors could be traced to wireless motors which he displayed before the Institute of Electrical Engineers in 1892. This single invention not only established all of the essential principles of what came to be known a few years later as the radio, it also lay as the basis of such other creations as the wireless telephone, garage door opener, the car radio, the facsimile machine, television, the cable TV scrambler, and remote-controlled robotics. The precise nature of the invention, virtually its patent application, was published in most of the technical journals at the time of its inauguration. The teleautomaton paralleled precisely a model developed by British novelist Edward Bulwer Lytton in 1871, although Tesla insisted in a missive to Johnson, written 2 years after the invention's inauguration, that he had not been inspired by this science fiction tale. As Bulwer Lytton was perhaps the most popular author next to Charles Dickens at that time, it is unlikely that Tesla was unaware of this story when he conceived of the invention. In The Coming Race, Bulwer Lytton describes a concept which he called vril power. This was an energy transmitted from the eye and body of the fictional advanced species which was used to animate automatons. In essence, Tesla built a working model that substituted electricity for the novelist's vril. The story begins when the protagonist falls into a hole in the earth and comes upon an advanced civilization. In all service, whether in or out of doors, they, the people of Vrilya, make great use of automaton figures, which are so ingenious and so pliant to the operations of Vril that they actually seem gifted with reason. It was scarcely possible to distinguish the figures I beheld, apparently gliding, the rapid movements of vast engines from human forms endowed with thought. As we shall see, key aspects of Bulwer Lytton's story correlate quite closely with the positions espoused by Tesla. The electrical exhibition was organized by Stanford White, who worked with Tesla to fashion a rainbow room of neon lights at the entrance, and it was presided over by Chauncey Depew, another Tesla friend who was also one of the principals of the New York Central Railroad and a U.S. senator from New York. It had been hoped that President McKinley would illuminate the exposition by means of telegraph lines from Washington, but something went awry, so Vice President Garrett Hobart opened the proceedings instead. Representing the Marconi Company was Tom Edison's son, Tom Jr., who obtained the position through T.C. Martin. This liaison marked the beginning of a partnership between Marconi and Edison, as the Menlo Park wizard had wireless patents which the Italian wanted to own in order to boost his legal position on priority of discovery. The event also portended the upcoming break in the friendship between Tesla and Martin. Animosities between Spain and the United States had run high for a number of years, ever since 1895, when the Spaniards took repressive measures against rebelling Cubans. Many Americans began to champion the cause of Cuban annexation. The sinking of the battleship Maine in Havana Harbor in February of 1898 eliminated any doubts, and war was officially declared 2 months later. Tesla had been meeting with John Jacob Astor throughout this period in his continuing attempts to woo the financier, as Astor spelled out more clearly his position on relevant issues. While his wife played Mahjong at home, the colonel jaunted along the deck of his mighty ship, the Norma Hull, which he had armed with 4 machine guns in order to protect against potential pirates. Labeled as insipid and henpecked by gossip columnists, Astor sought his freedom on the high seas. Perhaps it was during an outing on Astor's yacht that the inventor conceived the idea of fashioning the teleautomaton in the form of a torpedo. "Come to Cuba with me, where you can demonstrate your work upon the insufferable scoundrels," Astor suggested. Tesla may have been tempted, but in the midst of a whirlwind of invention, he graciously declined, as he had been called, for a higher duty. Tesla finalized construction of his remote-controlled boat and considered how to make amends as Astor conferred with President McKinley in Washington and then hastened to the front lines. The colonel had donated $75,000 to the U.S. Army to equip an artillery division for use in the Philippines and lent the Normahal to the Navy for use in battle. The tall ship, nearly 100 yards in length, was equipped with a corps of military seamen. Able to feed 65 at one sitting, the steam-driven three-masted schooner made a formidable warship. With his honorary rank stepped up to Inspector General, Colonel Astor sailed his battalion down to Cuba, where he could watch Teddy Roosevelt in the Battle of San Juan Hill through a pair of field glasses. Beating the Spanish with modern instruments of destruction became the overriding theme of the exposition. Tesla would have far and away the most sophisticated construction, but he chose to portray it by deceptively emphasizing mysterious features. In demonstrating my invention before audiences, the visitors were requested to ask any question, however involved, and the automaton would answer them by signs. This was considered magic at the time, but it was extremely simple, for it was myself who gave the replies by means of the device. The boat, approximately 4 feet in length and 3 feet high, was placed in a large tank in the center of a private auditorium, set up for special viewing for key investors like J. O. Ashton, George Westinghouse, J. Pierpont Morgan, and Cornelius Vanderbilt. By means of a variety of transmitters and frequencies, the inventor could start, stop, propel, steer, and operate other features, such as putting lights on or off. Tesla was also planning on constructing a prototype submersible, perhaps to compete in the mock battles that were staged between models of the American ships and the Spanish fleet, but it was never built. Due to the lack of access the press had to this exclusive invention, the newspapers featured Marconi's wireless detonation system instead. By means of a bomb planted on board the enemy frigate and a simple button placed in the hands of Tom Jr., Spanish ships were blown to smithereens. Marconi, however, had not solved the problem of tuning a frequency, and so on one occasion Edison's son accidentally blew up a desk in a back room that had housed other bombs. Fortunately, no one was injured. It appears that the public appreciated the dramatic Marconi contraption, which appealed to baser instincts as compared to Tesla's masterwork, which was 16 years ahead of its time operationally and at least a century ahead of its time conceptually. That is, as envisioned in final form. Only the scientific journals explained with any clarity the complexity of the design. Tesla's coy portrayal kindled a blitzkrieg of epithets from the press. The following fantastic prognostication particularly upset them. Torpedo boat without a crew. My submarine boat, loaded with its torpedoes, can start out from a protected bay or be dropped over a shipside, make its devious way along the surface through dangerous channels of mine beds, watching for its prey, then dart upon it at a favorite moment, discharge its deadly weapon, and return to the hand that sent it. I am aware that this sounds almost incredible, and I have refrained from making this invention public until I had worked out practically every detail. By allowing the following editorial to appear in his journal, Electrical Engineer, T.C. Martin was, in a backhanded way, another to lead the assault. Mr. Tesla and the Tsar. Mr. Tesla fools himself, if he fools anybody, when he launches into the dazzling theories and speculations associated with his name. Just of late, Mr. Tesla has been given publicity to some of his newest work. We should be glad, personally, to see him finish up some of the many other things that have occupied his energies these 10 years past. The editorial then went on to criticize Tesla's oscillator and his method of delivering large quantities of current without wires, say from Niagara Falls to Paris, which has also yet to happen. Mr. Marconi has already telegraphed from balloon to balloon without wires over 20 miles, thus proving in advance the tenability of Mr. Tesla's proposition. Discredit of the wireless torpedo followed. This was in reaction to Tesla's suggestion that the ultimate weapons could be devil automata. Caught up in war fever, Tesla emphasized nefarious implications of his work. Automatons would fight while humans would live. He wrote, The continuous development in this direction must ultimately make war a mere context of machines without men and without loss of life, a condition which will lead, in my opinion, to permanent peace. This position was refuted by a number of individuals, the most eloquent by Frenchman Monsieur Huart. The genius of destruction. Like all inventors of destructive machines, Tesla claims that his devil automata will make the governments which are inclined to create international conflagrations hesitate. On this account, Nikola Tesla claims a right to be called a benefactor of humanity. The genius of destruction would seem to have, then, two aims. It creates evil, but mostly good. Through its help, the abolition of wars may no longer be a utopia of generous dreamers. A blessed era will open up to the people whose quarrels will be settled in view of the terror of the cataclysms promised by science. What contradictions of conception is the human mind subject to? Coincidentally, this view was espoused by Mark Twain, who wrote to Tesla from Europe wanting to sell the patents to cabinet ministers in Austria, Germany, and England, by Bulwer Lytton, and by Tsar Nicholas of Russia, whom Tesla himself was negotiating with. And that was how Nicholas Tesla became associated with the Tsar. In the modern era, Edward Teller, one of the inventors of the hydrogen bomb, and more recently President Ronald Reagan in his 1980s Star Wars speeches, have also expounded on this position. But Tesla, much like Einstein, came to regret his initial view of how the agents of Armageddon could lead humans to peace. The brazen essay, which had appeared in Martin's journal, continued as an introduction to Tesla's thoughtful paper on electrotherapeutics, and then concluded with the following convoluted backhand compliment. It is not our desire to pose as apologists or publicists for Mr. Tesla. He needs no assistance of that kind. And so long as he commands freely whole pages of the Sunday papers, for which Mr. Wanamaker pays gladly his thousands of dollars, the scientific journals have little to do with the matter. All we wish to say is that it is not fair to condemn, as many do, Mr. Tesla as a visionary and impractical. No man has finished his work till he is dead, and even then there are long, long centuries in which his ideas can prove themselves true. The visionaries are thus often, in the end, the most sordid of realists, something Mr. Tesla will never be. As Martin had been, in a sense, Tesla's advance man, his decision to allow this critique in his journal became a tacit sanction for other writers to unfurl their condemnation. For instance, another scathing review appeared in both the Scientific American and the more popular Public Opinion. The article appeared on the same page as the obituary of mountebank inventor John Worrell Keeley. Was Keeley a charlatan? In the death of J.W. Keeley of Keeley Motor fame, the world has been robbed of one of its most unique and fascinating characters. Keeley was always going to startle the world, but never did. It is sincerely to be hoped that Keeley's alleged secrets have died with him. Science and sensationalism. That the author of the multi-phase system of transmission should at this late date be flooding the press with rhetorical bombast that recalls the wildest days of the Keeley motor mania is inconsistent and inexplicable to the last degree. The facts of Mr. Tesla's invention are few and simple, as the fancies which have been woven around it are many and extravagant. The principles of the invention are not new, nor was Tesla the original discoverer. This implication that Tesla was not the author of his system of wireless communication echoed previous charges that he was not the genuine inventor of the AC polyphase system. This was what particularly angered him, as it was essential that his work be original. "I wish I could lay upon the fellow all the forked lightning in my laboratory," Tesla told the Johnsons at dinner at their home. "Perhaps it would be more effective if an outside person came to your defense," Robert suggested. "My dear Luca, I know that you are a noble fellow and devoted friend, and I appreciate your indignation at these uncalled-for attacks. But I beg you not to get involved under any condition, as you would offend me. Let my friends do their worst. I like it better so. Let them spring on scientific societies' worthless schemes,
Oppose a cause which is deserving. Throw sand into the eyes of those who might see. They will reap their reward in time.
Then how can we redress such an outrageous individual?
Let us have a profound contempt for the creature, Tesla concluded. I don't see Comerford in this same category, Catherine offered, trying to set the stage for a reconciliation. I know you and Luca want me to forgive your friend Martin for his disparaging editorial. It was well done, but not so painstakingly as many others before. He renders me more and more valuable services. At least talk to him, Catherine pleaded.
Tesla grabbed his hat, coat and gloves, and waved his hand.
Sorry for him, that is all, he said as he departed.
Tesla counterattacked with a spirited response to Electrical Engineer, which they were forced to publish. On more than one occasion you have offended me, but in my qualities both as Christian and philosopher, I have always forgiven you and only pitied you for your errors. This time, though, your offense is graver than the previous ones, for you have dared to cast a shadow on my honor. Being a bearer of high honors from a number of American universities, it is my duty, in view of this slur, to exact from you a complete and humble apology. On this condition, I will again forgive you, but I would advise you to limit yourself in your future attacks to statements for which you are not liable to be punished by law.
Tesla, of course, was angry with the general tone of the editorial, but what particularly upset him was the implication that he had abandoned his mechanical and electrical oscillators and his cold lamps without filaments, fluorescent lights. He was in the midst of negotiating a large business transaction with a number of investors, particularly Astor. In no way did he want there to be any implication that these endeavors were being abandoned. Martin's rebuttal was published right after Tesla's letter.
His friends to Mr. Tesla. One foremost electrical inventor, unnamed, probably Elihu Thompson, has been kind enough to say that the electrical engineer made Mr. Tesla.
This statement was disputed by Martin as a person's actions make the person. However, the journal, i.e. Martin, did cite the fact that in the past it published Tesla's articles and book of his inventions and lectures, and furthermore that it was their editor who had striven with all the ability possessed to explain Mr. Tesla's ideas. This is completely true. For an 8-year period, 1890 to 98, Electrical Engineer published 167 articles by or about Tesla, 40 more than Electrical Review and 70 more than Electrical World. Moreover, it was clearly Martin who choreographed the reclusive inventor's entree into the American electrical arena. As Tesla often promised more than he delivered, the journal, as a true friend, felt an obligation to urge him to complete a long trial of beautiful but unfinished inventions. They, i.e. Martin, also took keen exception to the fantastic statement about Tesla's remote-controlled flying machine that could change its direction in flight. Explode at will.
And never make a miss, Martin continued. Our past admiration of Mr. Tesla's real, tangible work is on record, and stands, but we draw the line at such things as these. We're sorry Mr. Tesla feels so keenly, but we cannot help it.
Given that this assault stemmed from one of Tesla's closest allies, it bears careful consideration. However, from a historical perspective, we should also consider hidden agendas. For instance, in 1894, Tesla was freely distributing his collected works and not paying for additional copies.
I made some money out of my Tesla book, Martin confessed to Elihu Thompson many years later, but it was promptly borrowed from me by the titular component, so 2 years of work went for nothing.
The following year, in 1895, Tesla's laboratory burned to the ground, and Martin wrote an admirable tribute. Perhaps this is why he did not insist Tesla repay him. Martin had been placed in an awkward position, for he was also a good friend of Tom Edison's, a powerful Tesla rival, and as a reporter, he had to be objective in covering advances from other rivals such as Marconi. Tesla's irritating habit of living beyond his means and seeing projects completed before they actually materialized was forever a source of frustration to his longtime protector. and history has so proved in many ways that Martin was right. Tesla's oscillators were never a commercial success. His wireless system of distributing light, information and power in its total form was never realized. And for reasons difficult to understand, Tesla's fluorescent lights were never marketed. On the other hand, Tesla was extremely prolific. He did build working models of all his inventions. For instance, the teleautomaton was a fully functioning prototype, and it takes many years for one's endeavors to come to fruition. Tesla had already proved himself in a variety of ways. That all of his projects never materialized is understandable, given the great scope of his efforts. Tesla's teleautomaton remains one of the single most important technological triumphs of the modern age. In its final form, it was conceived as a new mechanical species capable of thinking as humans do, capable of carrying out complex assignments, and even capable of reproduction. The invention also comprised all of the essential features of wireless transmission and selective tuning. Here was a true work of genius. Surprisingly, Tesla was an adherent of a stimulus-response model for explaining human behavior and consciousness, rather than a proponent of a model espousing a creative unconscious. The rivalry between Ernst Mach and Carl Stumpf, Tesla's philosophy teacher discussed earlier, and the work of Descartes on the self-propelled automata correlate to a number of key positions Tesla took which influenced directly the development of his teleautomaton. The mind, according to this proposition, was nothing more than a simple compilation of cause and effect sensations. What we call ideas were secondary impressions derived from these primary sensations. Paradoxically, although Tesla's achievement was highly original, and although he touted himself as the creator of new principles, in no way did the inventor think that he had ever produced a new idea that did not stem from something external, for example, a mechanism present in nature or deriving from the work of others. A reader of great philosophers, Tesla fully understood what the adoption of his teleautomaton would mean to the world. He clearly saw the implication in the coming race. Machines would not only replace laborers, they would think for themselves. Tesla's genius, therefore, was not only in the appreciation of the advanced thinking of others, but also, and more important, in implementing on a practical basis their abstract ideas. Whereas others sought to change the world with thoughts, Tesla manifested on the physical plane real working models. He certainly was the father of remote-controlled electronic beings, but he would have been the last person to claim that he was the father of the idea. In a famous article printed in The Century in 1900, Tesla explained the entire conceptualization behind his teleautomaton. "I have, by every thought and every act of mine, demonstrated, and do so daily, to my absolute satisfaction that I am an automaton endowed with a power of movement, which merely responds to external stimuli beating upon my sense organs, and thinks and acts accordingly. I remember only one or two cases in all my life which I was unable to locate the first impression which prompted a movement, or a thought, or even a dream." Tesla neglects to mention that one of these two instances was the revelation he had in Professor Pershall's class. He had seen that the commutator could be eliminated in the DC machines. In other words, Tesla's most successful invention, the AC polyphase system, was initiated from intuitive insight. Nevertheless, Tesla stubbornly clung to the tabula rasa premise. No inspiration, according to this pundit, began from within. Self-directed responses were initiated only after external stimuli were received. This is a complex idea, as it seems from the following paragraph that Tesla believes the reverse. "How cosmic forces shape our destinies. Every living being is an engine geared to the wheelwork of the universe. There is no constellation or nebula, no sun or planet, that does not exercise some control over its destiny. Not in the vague and delusive sense of astrology, but in the rigid and positive meaning of physical science. More than this can be said. There is no thing endowed with life, from man who is enslaving the elements to the humblest creature in all the world, that does not sway in its turn." At the time he conceived these ideas, that is, in the early 1890s,
Tesla was studying Herbert Spencer and also Buddhist writings. He even gave his friend Johnson a copy of a book on Buddhism to read.